Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock. It is Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina, your host for the evening, in studio with the lovely, vivacious, and ever so lovely, lovely, lovely Bobby Jean Bell, her husband Jim, and tonight, very special people in our studio with us, my daughter Patricia and her husband Fred. And they are from Atlanta, Georgia. And they're going to be sitting here snickering and probably making foul gestures and whatever it is.
And there'll be pictures on Facebook later.
So there you go. We want to kind of start out the show tonight with some bad news. Our co-host, Russ Avison, his mother passed away yesterday. And so our thoughts and our prayers go out to Russ for that. And as soon as we can get some word from him, we'll kind of let you know what's going on. So other than that, good luck to you, Russ, and we're thinking about you. On the good side, I had a wonderful conversation with one of our guests yesterday, Gina McKnight. About a half an hour, she interviewed me, and it was so much fun. I actually haven't been interviewed very often, so it was like, wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Your turn.
Yeah, it was my turn, and it was like just a lot of fun. And she said, well, okay, you know, we're going to do this for my blog, and then I'm going to send this in for True Cowboy Magazine. You can be in there with your friend Dale Jackson. I said, DB's a really good guy. She goes, oh, is that what he's called himself? I said, yeah, it's DB Jackson. That's what he writes under. And I said, but the truth is, he kills dogs.
You're just not going to let go of that.
No, I have now let go of that.
Okay, I'm going to make a note of that.
I promised the bookie I would let go of that. And you know what I'm looking for? I just found it. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley. The nice folks out there, Black Dog. And Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, California. The great folks out there as well. And Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And, you know, we mention Target Freight every show, and we mentioned that they have a full truckload service. That's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload is the finest in the industry and gets your freight there every time, on time, at the rates you need for your transportation costs? I'll bet not. I'll bet we haven't said that yet. Call today, 1-844-653-7789. And tell them you heard it here in the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something for you. Grab that pencil, sharpen it up, 844-653-7789. And while we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper, which is less than truckload, you are probably looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to get your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry. Yay.
Yay. We thank them.
Yes, we do. They're just great folks, and we love them because they allow us to use their name on our show, and then, of course, they pay us handsomely for that. So that being said, if you want to call in and talk to our guest tonight, the number here is 818-602-4929. The number again is 818-602-4929. At this point, in this juncture, I kind of want to read a couple reviews from this book that we're going to be speaking with tonight. I have like four. I'll pick maybe two. One is from our friend J.T. Biggs. And J.T., John's a great guy. And he says, this book does not have 1 ounce of fat. Every single character, every line, every bit of description fits seamlessly into a plot that is perfectly crafted from start to finish. Peggy Chambers has successfully written in a number of genres, but I think she's found a permanent home on Sandhill Island. Yay. Okay, I'm not sure what I expected, but I was pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed this book. Rather a gruesome, murderous beginning, a sweet love story, independence, friends, mother and son, hurricane action, food, and more all add up to a delightful entertainment. It was engaging throughout, but as it neared the end, I certainly did not want to stop reading. Too exciting to put down. I was provided a copy via NetGalley in exchange for my honest review. I don't know how honest this review
is. That's a great
really
review.
I look forward to reading more by Peggy Chambers.
I hope she writes a sequel.
Me too. Well, Peggy calls Enid, Oklahoma home. She's been writing for several years, is an award-winning, three-time published author, always working on another book. Well, it's somewhat like myself. There aren't enough hours in the day. That is absolutely true, Peggy. She retired last spring and can now spend all her time making up stories. She has two children, five grandchildren, and lives with her husband and dog. Sounds like me. Except I don't have a husband.
You have a wife.
We couldn't do this show without her. And that's the bookie. She adores travel, yoga, and curling up with a good book in front of a roaring fire. She loves the great outdoors, even if it's just taking the dog for a walk, and once ate warthog pizza for lunch when she followed her husband across deepest, darkest Africa. Warthog pizza. There's something to be
proud of. It sounds like something out of a Harry Potter book, actually.
That is kind of like really a lofty ambition. She even climbed the pyramids at Chichen Itza on the Yucatan Peninsula. She attended Phillips University, the University of Central Oklahoma, and is a graduate of the University of Oklahoma. She is a member of Enid Writers Club, Oklahoma Writers Federation, Inc., and Oklahoma Woman Bloggers. There is always another story weaving itself around in her brain, trying to come out. Would you please welcome to the writer's block, Peggy Chambers. Peggy, you with us?
I am. There is applause. I was impressed.
We have 100 people.
All those people.
Yeah, we have 100 people here in the studio.
Oh my God, they're just loaded. It's you know, we have to quiet them down occasionally. They get a little rowdy.
Mm-hmm. Imagine.
Hey, I have something here from the bookie. The bookie being Jerry Christina. She's the one that does all our booking, and I believe she sent this to you today. And she just, this is what she wanted the world to know about Peggy Chambers. Peggy, I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed reading Secrets of Sand Hill Island. You left me wanting more. I was able to picture myself on the front porch of that little beach house, sipping iced tea, letting the breeze blow through my hair, all the while the waves pounding on the shore. What a wonderful read. I've passed the book on to my sister in North Carolina, and I know she will enjoy it as much as I did. I had to finish your book before your interview tonight. I didn't want anyone to spoil it for me. I can't wait. That means that we do give spoiler alerts. I can't wait for your next book to come out. And may I ask if there are more adventures for Meg, Alex, and John in the future? Good luck tonight. You'll have a wonderful time. Thank you again, Jerry Christina, the bookie, the Writer's Block radio show. So, question asked, is there a sequel to Secrets of Sand Hill Island?
Not yet, but it is in the works.
Oh, yay!
Well, that'll make Bobby thrilled.
Yes. Sand Hill Island has just turned into a real place. Some people have asked me if it really does exist, and I said only in my mind, but I think that it has a lot of different people on the island that need to tell their story.
Well, as Bobby said earlier, we were off the air when she said this. She goes, "It makes me want to go to Sam's for dinner."
Yes, I want to eat it.
And it makes me. She goes, "I want to know all these people."
Do we want to just start talking about the book, or we want to ask Peggy a little bit about her background and writing and when she started writing, or do you want to just get into
I think
the book?
We started with the book. Let's get, because I personally am enthralled with this book. I absolutely loved it, and I read it in just a matter of days, so it was just really a fun read and a really fast read for me. What gave you the idea to write this, if I may ask?
The way I always start something out, I think I need to have a place. The plot is important, but the area where I write from is even more so. And I'm a water kind of person. I love the water, any type of water. And my parents had a place down at, during Harlingen, Texas, down on the Gulf Coast when they retired. And I love to go down there. I grew up on a lake. Anything having to do with water, I'm there. And originally, I thought maybe Meg might really be a very poor woman who lived off the proceeds of her vegetable garden. But the more I got into it, I thought Meg really wasn't who everybody thought she was. So everybody had secrets on Sand Hill Island.
Actually, everybody knew who she was anyway.
Well, she...
the secret.
Yeah, we're going to have to try to figure out how to talk about this book without spoiling it for readers who will want to get it immediately. The novel begins with a glimpse of a murder, and then the story fast forwards 30 years. Did you have that idea in mind, writing sort of the short prologue that gets us started, or did the prologue come like after the fact?
Well, the prologue came later. I was trying to find a good hook. I didn't want to be too boring with Meg pulling her vegetables into town to sell them. And I had originally thought I might try to write a romance novel. And the people in my book club, my writing club, always laugh at me and say, Peggy, you can't write a romance novel. Someone dies on the first page. And that's probably true. At least it was on this one. I like the action. Mm-hmm. And it was just another secret that we could dole out a little at a time.
Well, the prologue got me on, page one. Or page one and a half.
That was like even before the copyright page.
Yeah,
it was like right there.
Yeah. So we race. You get us started, and we just want to know all about these characters. So we've got Meg, who we mentioned a moment, and now Alex. Tell us a little bit about Alex.
Alex has just been a man who has spent all of his life concerned with his career more than he never had too many relationships, and he was a professor on a university, and he was sexually harassed by a student, which is the opposite of what you mm-hmm. normally would think. Mm-hmm. And in the process of it, he lost his job, even though she was the pursuer. And he decided he really wanted to go try to, instead of teach art, maybe he would try to make a living off of his art. So he went down to this little island, and he spent the summer down there while he was painting, and he ran into this lovely lady next to him that was selling vegetables. And they struck up a friendship.
Mm-hmm. Now, we meet along the way, of course, her son, Meg's son, John. Mm-hmm. And his fiance. Tell us a little about Victoria Chung. Spoiling things.
Victoria's looking for somebody to take care of her, evidently. She's not, she wants people to think she is cultured and capable of looking after herself. And really, she's looking for a sugar daddy, and that's where John comes in, because John's got plenty of money. Well, she has him pretty well hooked until he figures out that she's not everything he thought she would be.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, as Jim knows, we have some really nasty people. We have Mike Fitzgerald, very nasty Mike Fitzgerald.
Oh, you could tell he was nasty from the time he showed up in the book.
And then you give us this kind of mysterious gentleman named Poppy.
Right.
I loved Poppy.
Yeah.
Poppy was an interesting guy, and he could he filled in a lot of holes, helped pull the book together. And he's kind of a background. He's the fiddler on the roof. He sees everything, but he doesn't really talk about it.
Yeah,
he's confronted.
Yeah, he sees everything, and nobody really gives him much attention.
Right.
He's just kind of always there, but, he's the guy that you see in your neighborhood, but you don't ever really talk to or anything, and then you realize he has, like, all the pieces that you need.
He knows everything.
Now, yep. I know from your blog that you seem to be quite a gardener, and in this book, the garden is almost like a character in the book. I'm assuming you're an avid gardener.
I love to garden. It's different on a seashore than it is in Enid, Oklahoma, of course. But I do like to piddle around. And these days when I'm retired, I do a lot more than I used to. I have a nice little herb garden that I cook from and enjoy that a lot.
If you don't mind, and Jim, if it's okay with you, could I read from the book a description of the garden?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that all right with you, Peggy?
Sure. That would be fine. Great.
This is a scene in the book where Alex is coming to kind of meet Meg at her home for the first time, and he sees the garden. A garden on a seashore is tricky, I would think. You have an incredible green thumb, that's said by Alex. He wandered through the maze of plants, past the lavender and mint, before he reached the tomatoes held up by their vertical cages, and sat on the small wooden bench. It faced the ocean and was shaded by the tall stand of pampas grass planted behind it. The wind slightly blew the stalks back and forth, making a comforting swishing sound. He looked at the scene with an artist's eye as he surveyed the lovely garden in sharp contrast to the rustic beach house and softly rolling waves of the ocean. He breathed deeply. This is heaven, and I need to paint this. He walked around in a circle looking at everything. Would it be too much trouble if I set up an easel here sometime? I really need to paint this. The rustic house, the garden, and the sea, that's what I came here for. I wanted to paint the sea. Meg could see the passion in his eyes as he looked out into the vast blue ocean, and she remembered a man with passion in his eyes for the sea once, and she looked away. This place is wonderful. I have never seen such beauty and ruggedness in one setting. Please say it's okay if I paint it. I love that.
Yeah,
it would be nice to have a garden like that.
Wouldn't it?
It'd be great.
And
it would
be
a lot of work.
You introduced a little bunny.
You did.
That was so fun. What made you think to introduce a little bunny to that garden?
Well, you know, bunnies love gardens, right? You know, my sister lives out in the country, and she has a lot of trouble with bunnies, and they like to take over everything. But this little bunny, because it was an island, no one knew for sure where it came from because there wasn't a family of bunnies around, and she takes him off the island.
Right.
But he doesn't stay.
No, he winds up back on the island.
We have a sequel with
back.
That bunny.
He's like the phantom bunny.
Yeah.
Phantom bunny.
I have to ask, because it always intrigues me about people that are so creative, and as you apparently are. I mean, you write some wonderful stuff. When you were writing Secrets of Sandhill Island, did you retire in the middle of it?
I had retired after it was published, actually.
Oh,
I think
okay.
I wrote it during the time I was still working.
Yeah. You were on your way to retirement, though, when you were...
Mm-hmm. Getting close,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you been writing most of your life, Peggy?
You know, I didn't. I did as a young person, and then I didn't get back into it. My parents both became ill about the same time, and when they did, I found that there was a really good outlet for me. Writing was kind of a therapy. I could get my thoughts and feelings down. And from there, it just kind of grew, and I got into a writer's club in my hometown, and then another writer's club, which was statewide, and it just has taken on a life of its own, kind of. It was a great thing to do when you're retired.
Oh, yeah. I'm not there yet, but one of these years.
And you found a publisher for the book. Were you working with a literary agent, or did you find, was it Wild Rose Publishing?
Wild Rose Press.
Press.
I met Wild Rose Press, actually, at a writer's convention in Oklahoma City, and I talked with them, and they wanted to see it, and I sent it in, and then I worked with an editor through them. And for some reason or another, and I've had more than one editor, but you know how you sometimes just really hit it off with someone, and Allie and I just did we worked well together. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed her, and I think that made all the difference in the world.
Well, you know, because we have quite a few writers that have agents, and I mean, one that seems to be the most prevalent agent that we deal with is Jeannie Loyacano out of Texas. And mm-hmm. it always seems that the writers, a lot of them don't have an agent, don't want an agent, can feel they can do it on their own, meet publishers, do it on like you did. And then mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that feel like they have to go through agents. And I just, you know, there's a big school out there that everybody has their own idea. It's like going through a publishing house or independently publishing, and which we have before called self-publishing, which we no longer will. We will now call it independent publishing. But there's a good platform for each one. So I suppose at this point in the whatever I'm talking about, I have no clue.
Yes,
no,
yes,
at this point, you know, everybody is free to do what they want to do, and as long as you're willing to jump in and self-promote, you can independently publish and probably get as much readership as you would with through a publishing house. I don't know. Maybe I'm talking out of my rear end.
I think that might be true to an extent. I independently published a book called Gloam's Valley, and I truly did it as kind of an experiment. Can I do this? And it didn't get a lot of readership, so I went back to a publisher and I said, what could I do with this? Maybe we could, the two of us, publish it again together. So I took it down off of, it was just on the Kindle website on Amazon. And we took it down and I rewrote it, doubled the size of it. And it has done really well. If you can get, I've done a lot of self-promotion, but if you can get someone to help you, your publisher to help you, or an agent if you have one, certainly never hurts, you know. Any way that you can get the word out about your book is a good thing.
Well, since we opened the door in Gloam's Valley, I'm going to step right into that open doorway because I have not finished it. I'm about halfway through, and it is absolutely engaging. I can't wait to finish it. We've got a young boy in current time, but then we've got fairies and trolls, and we've got Vikings and Norse gods, and we've got a dad archaeologist, and it's just way too much fun. And I understand that this runestone actually exists in southeastern Oklahoma. Is that, have you been there? Is that where you got the idea of writing this story?
It is. It does exist, and yes, that's where I got the idea. Again, setting. I started off with setting before I wrote the book. But there is a little... A runestone that's a, I don't know, 15 feet high or something like that, and it's got carving on it that looks like ancient Viking carving. And of course, there's some schools of thought that say that the Vikings were in America long before Columbus was ever there. And so it's a park down in southeastern Oklahoma, and I went down to Heavener and I really loved it there. And as it has turned out, I've gotten a little bit of a following down there. I've got my book in a bookstore, a gift shop in the park, and twice a year they have a Viking festival down there. Everybody dresses up, kind of like a medieval festival, but it's Viking. And I've been setting up a booth down there, and I've had a lot of people buy the book, and they really enjoy it. And it's fun because it's an absolutely gorgeous place. And you can just, you know, see the fairies and the magic swords and such. It's an ideal fairy tale for Oklahoma.
Now, in the dedication, I think you dedicated this to your, is it your grandson, Ethan?
Yes.
And he's kind of the central character in this book as well. Is he kind of based on your grandson, Ethan?
Well, I took him down there, and he really enjoyed it. Now, at the time, he was in grade school, and he got his driver's license recently, so he'd be really embarrassed to know Grandma was talking about him. But he did, at the time, really enjoy that, and he thought it was pretty neat that Grandma wrote books, and, you know, he... When I wrote a book one time called Ian and the Magic Numbers, and my Ethan was... early grade school or preschool at that time, and he wanted to know why I didn't name him Ethan. So when I wrote another book, I named the boy Ethan this time, and he enjoyed it. But it's beautiful down there, and it's very magical. There's something about that forest it's truly magical down there. It's almost in Arkansas and Louisiana. It's right down in, I mean, in Texas, right in the corner. You could just go a few miles and you'll end up in Arkansas. So it's in the Ouachita Mountains.
I mean, anything with a rune in it, I was attributed to be magical.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Especially a large one.
And there's 15-foot. I mean, I thought that was so interesting. I thought, I wonder if this is for real. And, of course, I went and did the normal Google thing and found a whole website dedicated to it, as well as, you know, Wikipedia and everything else. And I thought, where have I been all these years? I've never even knew this existed. It's fascinating.
Well, that is assuming, of course, that Wikipedia is normal.
Well, right. The website that is actually dedicated to it was very interesting because it also talks about Robert LaSalle, and that was a whole nother story. Like, oh, I got to read more about all of this.
Well,
we diverge.
Like, so there's more than one school of thought. Some people think mm-hmm. that it's Indian, something else, but I don't know. I met on the internet. I met a man named Robert Roper that wrote another version of that story. His was the Vikings coming down the east coast of the United States and up the Mississippi and into this area, and he wrote the story of Glom. Some people think that the monolith says Glom's Valley, that Glom was naming this valley for himself. So he wrote it from that standpoint. It was very interesting because, you know, it's always fun to try a new idea. Maybe the Vikings really were in Oklahoma. That's kind of far-fetched, but it's fun. It made for a fun fairy tale.
Yeah, it's a great book. Like I say, I'll be reading it tonight. Finish it before I go to bed tonight.
Well, that's her going to bed tonight is like Thursday next week.
Now, Peggy, we know that you write across several different genres. We were just talking right now, romance, suspense, and young adult fiction. Tell us a little bit about how you blog as well. So tell us a little bit about, and you just won the first honorable mention for a short story, a horror story called Red Eye. So you mm-hmm. obviously enjoy all of these different formats. Can you tell a little about what's that like to juggle different genres?
Well, I think the reason that I juggle them is that I just have an idea in my head and I go with it. The very first thing I ever got published was a pulp fiction called The Apocalypse Sucks. And pulp fiction is kind of an acquired taste for some people. But I found these wonderful publishers that agreed to take on my story. But I started out writing children's books. I decided I would try romance, which I said someone died on the first page. I like short stories. Short stories, you can get the story down so much quicker, but yet it still follows the story arc. You still have to have all the characterizations mm-hmm. and such. Red Eye was a horror short story that won honorable mention at OWFI, and I'm a big Stephen King fan, so I do love horror fiction. I haven't figured out yet which way I need to go. I probably ought to find a niche and stick with it, but I haven't done that yet.
Well, I don't know that you need to do
just
that.
Stick with all the genres you're doing. You're doing great.
Well, and you were saying, and I just read the first couple pages of Apocalypse Sucks, and I was like, okay, that I will also read, because once again, you got me on line one, but not enough hours in the day to prepare for this show. But that was published by Airship 27, which is sort of an interesting company.
I also met them at a writer's conference, and they are a really great bunch of people to work with. They will pair a writer with an artist, and all of their artwork, the cover and the interior illustrations and such, are original. And they just recently put out an anthology with some 80, I think something like that, 80 writers. It was a benefit book for one of the writers who was having some health problems and needed some money. They were trying to help him out. So a lot of us went together, and we each wrote a story, and they published it in this book called Legends of New Pulp Fiction. And I do enjoy pulp fiction now and then. It's just different. Mm-hmm. You can do so many things with it. Doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't have to be realistic. It can't be realistic. My story was called Werewolves in the Park. And I decided if I'm going to write a werewolf story, it's going to be about a woman, and she's a single mother, and she's got her problems. So she's trying to work on Wall Street and take care of puppies at the same time. So.
We had an author on last year. His name is Gary Phillips, and he does a lot of Pulp Fiction.
A lot of Pulp Fiction.
And he was fascinating, mm-hmm. I have to say. And what we read was just wonderful. Mm-hmm. His was spy Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, yeah. But he writes in several Pulp Fiction kind of genres.
He writes in several genres, yeah. But right. The guy was just tremendous. Just tremendous. I have to ask you, reading your book, and I'm sorry, I have not yet gotten into Gloam's Valley or The Apocalypse Sucks. However, that book I really want to get into. when you write dialogue, do you find dialogue hard to write, or does it come very easily and naturally to you?
I think that depends upon the character. The Apocalypse Sucks, most of it is the dialogue is between these two women, and they play off each other very well. They're mm-hmm. snarky. They're typical girls. They're always on each other's case about something. I like doing that. I have trouble sometimes with dialogue if it's not the type of person that I would associate with.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's a little different because you don't want him. You don't want some motorcycle guy to sound like a wimpy librarian. You know.
No.
So it's a little more difficult, but I do enjoy some of it, especially. I think it's a lot of fun, especially those two girls. They were me and some of my friends, I think.
I'll make sure you get that, Jim.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And developing the relationship. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say on The Apocalypse Sucks, one day at work, a couple of little girls were out in the hallway arguing about something or other. And please go fix your hair. It looks like you stuck your head in a light socket or something. And I walked out and I said, can I use this? Would you mind if I use this dialogue in my book? And they thought that was pretty funny.
Did you use it?
I did. They were so perfect.
There you go.
That's what songwriters will tell me too, that sometimes, you know, they overhear the most amazing thing that goes into a song. It's like, if you're going to hang around with songwriters, be prepared.
You know, the truth is that I have never yet heard a writer say, I can make this stuff up. They all say the same thing. You can't make this stuff up. And I'm sorry, Bookie, I used the word stuff, but that's in context with another comment.
I've never actually heard you use that, but even now when you just said it, if you hadn't just made the
comment.
See,
I didn't even pay attention. The bookie gets me about saying stuff. I have to watch what I say.
We've talked a little bit about plot development as we were talking about Secrets of Sand Hill. Do you outline and have a pretty good general idea of where the book's going to go, or do you get started and then it speaks with you to you as you go?
I normally outline, and I don't always stick with the outline. Sometimes it goes off in another direction, but I do outline. I started off, when I first started writing, I thought, well, you know, it'll just come to me, but it doesn't. You know, it really doesn't. I'm working right now on a children's book that's about a boy who is magic. He can use math for magic. And I had to sit down and find like 8 different scenes of where he would use his magic and then figure out which direction I wanted to use which one first.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people use those little cards, mm-hmm. the little index cards, you know, and then they can move a scene around wherever they like it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are always good. I think that an outline is good, but if you write a little scene and then move it over to the beginning instead of the end, I like to be able to move my scenes and things around. So, yes, I outline, but I do more just writing scenes and then figuring out where I want to put them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you find that when you're in the middle of, say, a chapter and you've got your outline done and you're working on chapter 6 of whatever book you're calling, let's say you're writing a book called The Fourth of Cunegonda, The New Starship Enterprise.
I got to write that down.
What's yeah, write title? That down. Yeah, feel free to use it. It's on the open market.
Yeah, how to spell that.
I couldn't spell it if I sat here with a pen. Anyway, do you find, because I do this, that your characters sometimes drive your story, and all of a sudden, you look and this character has totally gone 180 degrees from where they started in this chapter?
Well, I can find, a lot of times I know my characters do surprise me because, you know, you get to be, they're like the guy next door, and yet they aren't. But, yeah, they will surprise you and turn things around sometimes.
Right, right.
They really do.
Yeah, yes, they do.
Now, you take Meg into Corpus Christi, and you mm-hmm. take her into a scene at a boutique. Well, she's going to a place where she used to frequent all the time. They know her very well. They know her size and, right. and everything. And mm-hmm. You take us there, and we go through her hair and her nails and the choosing of some clothing. And it's a wonderful, really fun experience because we get to see kind of this other side of Meg. But as kind of preparing for tonight and reading, you know, with a different kind of eye, I wondered if you had planned her to have that episode all along, or did you think, you know, I'm going to have her meet the future daughter-in-law, and I really am going to need to clean her up a little bit? Or did, you know?
Well, I wanted to show why she didn't like to go back to Corpus Christi and the social the socialites that she used right. to, you know, run around with. They caused her a lot of trouble when she was there. But yes, she was always hanging out on the beach, no makeup, no sunscreen, mousy hair. She needed a little cleaning up before she met the daughter-in-law. But it was kind of fun because it also gave me an opportunity to show why Meg did not like living in the mm-hmm. big city. She preferred her little island and staying to herself. Mm-hmm. And it was a good way to show that.
I liked your explanation of her and the woman that professed to be her friend, that her kid was beating up on John.
Oh, yes.
And she just laid her out with her words. That was just absolutely phenomenal. I love it when characters can do that.
Yeah. You can always have a nice fight in the book, and you don't have to...
Exactly, and nobody gets hurt. Sure.
No one gets hurt.
Sure. I have an Irish character that all he does is swear. But he's really fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you describe your typical writing day to us?
I like to write... I'm sitting at the moment in the bedroom in my recliner where I write, and that seems to be my best bet, is to go in and shut the door and keep all the noise out. I was working for a while with a lady who was a beautiful artist. She made all these, she did all this painting and such, and so she gave me a picture that I hung above my recliner that I used as my muse. And, I don't know, he's an old man in a pair of overalls feeding potato chips to a kitten. And it's just the cutest little thing. But my day is, I like to start early. Sometimes I like Sundays because I'm always by myself on Sundays. I have the whole house to myself. But this room is... a small bedroom, but it's got my grandmother's bedroom suit in it and my father-in-law's recliner in it, and I'm kind of surrounded by family and family things, and it's comforting. And I'll write for 3 or 4 hours, and then I pretty much have to get up and move around a little bit. I have some friends that stand and write, like at a bar, because I know that it's probably better for you physically. I haven't found a way to do that yet.
Me either. I slump and write.
Stand in a bar, right. Like with a drink right there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I meant standing at the bar in the kitchen, not
right.
At a bar.
No,
Bobby was talking about standing at a bar.
I had a whole bunch of different images kind of went flying through my eyes right then, and I thought, you know, I ought to try that when I'm writing descriptions for our website.
That's
I
like
should
the
be
old,
standing at the bar.
Yeah, that's like the old one martini, two martini, three martini floor.
Floor. Yeah. I have a friend that is a writer, and she's also a personal trainer, and so she's always encouraging me to stand and write. But she has one of those nice desks that raise up and mm-hmm. then go back down again. Mm. And she does, like, deep knee bends. She goes up, she goes down, she goes up, she goes down, and she writes.
Well, we have learned.
I wouldn't even be able to find the key.
Yeah, we have learned a lot recently. It seems to be a lot in the press about the challenges of a sedentary or sitting, as many of us sit for our occupations or whatever. Now we're learning that there's a lot of damage that happens from constant sitting. So I can understand why that would be, something you'd be thinking about.
Yeah, as we sit here in the studio.
As we sit here in the studio. I think I need to stand up now, Jim.
Okay, Peggy. Writer's block, have you ever gotten it?
Not too badly. Normally, if I get stuck on a scene or something, I just start over with a brand new scene, and because I've got something else in my mind. I wrote the hurricane scene long before I wrote, certainly long before I wrote the ending. I liked that hurricane scene.
I do too.
I really wanted to get into the thick of that, and so sometimes when I have writer's block, I just go to another scene and write that, and then I'll come back. It'll start to fill in the holes.
The hurricane scene, I actually have a short paragraph of it here. I won't read it aloud, but what you did with us, we're back to the Secrets of Sandhill, is you take us on this wonderful journey of discovery with Meg and these characters, and the book moves right along. There's action, there's dialogue, there's character development, there's love, there's mystery, and then there is threat of a storm. And it's Hurricane Macy, and we're like on a bullet train. It starts, and then it just takes us. You can hardly turn the pages fast enough.
Yeah, the bookie will be with me on this. It's an e-ticket ride.
There you go, e-ticket ride. There's an exact, and yeah, and we just are rolling with that storm, aren't we, Jim?
Yep, it's a great piece of writing, I have to tell you. It's extremely visual. Extremely visual, and it really grabs you. So, kudos.
Yeah, I have a little bit of it here. Do you want me to read it?
A little bit, because we have to move along.
Just a little bit of it. The windows rattled until Meg was sure they would break. The huge gust of wind that blew the screens on the porch in suddenly stopped and sucked them back out. Then the rattle became a groan, which became louder, and the ripping began. Ancient nails being torn from their rotting wood creaked as they were pulled against their will, holding on to nothing, flying up and over the top of the house. Within an instant, the porch walls and roof were gone, and the floor was about to follow. Time to go, Alex shouted, and shouldered the backpack full of Meg's mementos. And it just goes from,
I was already grabbing my backpack.
Yeah.
Okay, Peggy. While we got you on the phone, any good comments or anything to tell aspiring writers, new writers, writers who want to get better?
Well, I think everybody always says write every day. I think that's really, really important. I sometimes skip a day or two, but when I do, I feel like I've neglected brushing my teeth or something real important like that. Writing every day is very important, and reading other types of writing so that you can see what other people are doing and how they might have handled a situation. I love to read.
Who are you reading now?
Oh, what am I reading? Let's see. I was reading. I just finished John Biggs' Cherokee Ice, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And John's an incredible writer. I've always loved Stephen King. Like I said, I saw him on the Today Show this week, and I want to pick up his newest one.
I know he has a new one out. I can't think of the title either.
I can't think of the title, but it has to do with a preacher that lost his faith or something like that.
And what are you working on? You said a children's book, and is there anything else that you're working on now?
The sequel to Sand Hill Island. I'm calling it Stones of Sand Hill Island.
Yay! Yeah.
Yay. And I have a children's book that I'm working on, too. I've also been told that I need to write a sequel to Gloam's Valley, so I don't know if I'll get that one done before I'm dead, but I'll try.
Everybody wants sequels, don't they?
Yeah.
Don't they, though?
Yep. Where can folks find you? What are you going to be up to? Email addresses? What's your website? Blah, blah, blah.
Okay, my website is peggylchambers.com, And I don't have anything right now that I'll be doing. I was pretty busy this spring, and I went to Ada's Writers Conference and Oklahoma City Writers Conference, and at the moment, I'm going to be home writing.
Okay, then.
And it would seem like you would recommend that authors join writing groups and get out there and meet with other authors and attend conferences and such. Is that right?
I do. I really think that's made a big difference in my writing. I've learned so much, and take courses, even if they're just online courses, mm-hmm. whatever you can mm-hmm. do. A lot of people like contests. I'm not real big into contests, but I always enter the ones for the Oklahoma ones and mm-hmm. the Enid, our little Enid Writers Club contest.
Well, you got a pretty good track record with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've done pretty well. I've enjoyed it. I got first place on a short story a couple of years ago with the Oklahoma Writers Conference, and that's a four-state deal, so mm-hmm. that made me feel like I had accomplished something.
Well, we want to thank you for spending your evening with us, even though you're probably on your fifth cup of coffee trying to keep your little peepers awake.
Well, I don't want to be up all night, you know.
Oh, no. And thanks so much for joining us and for agreeing to join us. It's been a wonderful, wonderful experience for us, too. So, and we do love your work so much. So if you would, keep in touch with us and let us know when the sequel's out and what else is on your plate.
I will.
If you would, please. And I'm going to be sending you a little gift from us. It's a coffee mug that has the Writer's Block Radio Show logo on it. And,
thank you.
And it's not made out of lead, so feel free to use it.
Coffee and tea taste really good in it.
It tastes the very best.
Okay.
And again, thank you so much for joining us, Peggy. It's been a hoot.
Thank you so much.
Oh,
thank
our
you.
Pleasure. And take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Peggy Chambers. Nice lady.
Really fun. She writes a really fun blog,
She writes really good books, I mean, I have to say. For those of you who are interested in being on the Writer's Block, I have to tell you that we are actually booked up through 2016. We have no slots open.
But you can call.
But you can call. You can always call in. And if we have, you can always go on the list. If we have cancellations, which we haven't had yet, we would love to be able to plug somebody in there. So
right. And this show can be heard podcasts on iTunes and Google
Music.
Music.
And also it'll be available if you want to listen to it again, which I'm sure you do, pretty much a minute after we go off the air.
Yeah, I listen on my way home.
So
and I will be posting the podcast link later on the Writer's Block Facebook page.
And we do thank you all for joining us in these little Thursday excursions of ours. We have so much fun, and we have actually learned so much.
I have read the best books this year, and I wouldn't have had time.
I know.
But you make time because you want to honor, you want to speak with these folks about what they've written, and you've got to read it.
Right. Gina asked me yesterday in our interview, she goes, well, do you read a lot?
More in this last year than I've read in a long time.
I said, Gina, you forget. I host a radio show. I got to read a book a week. She goes, oh, yeah.
Yeah. We do read.
So, again, our sympathies and our thoughts and prayers go out to Russ Avison tonight. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll be hearing something about him next week. And next week is our family show. It'll be all the Writer's Block people. Hopefully, Russ will be able to join us. Everybody will be here that has anything to do with the Writer's Block, and Henry will be calling in.
Oh, great.
And, of course, Jim, we're going to put him in front of a microphone next week so he can actually talk. Jim does have a voice. He just doesn't use it very often. And with that being said, I think that we're almost done for the night. And, oh, Patty, thank you so much for coming in. It's so nice to have you.
She's waving.
She is waving.
You have to describe.
And she's grinning from
grinning
ear to
waving.
Ear.
Grinning and waving.
And they actually were here for 4 days, and they went out
and they did
found a job.
Universal Studio. Oh,
these kids are like you know up and comers.
All right.
So they got it going.
And they went to the Ronald Reagan Library and had a fabulous time.
They did. They did. And yesterday was Patty's birthday.
So. Oh, happy birthday!
So she's like officially really old now.
I think she's still younger than us.
Yeah. She's never going to catch up.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening. Tune in next week when we're just going to have a ball. We're going to talk about anything we want to, and probably. probably the bookie's children's book that she wrote.
Oh, good.
And with that being said, you all have a good night. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Jim, Christina, and Bobby Bell saying good night from the Writer's Block.